It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
We're in the middle of the Farm to Fork Festival. This is the Farm to Table Talk podcast. And, you know, we've got people wandering all around. I hope that you guys are having as much fun as I am. You know, we've got music booming in the background. We've got people standing outside the tent here wanting some fresh-cut French fries and Mad Hatter's donuts. And what were there, 100,000 people here or something like that?
200,000.
300,000 maybe. It's an unbelievable number. There really are a lot. You can hear a lot of people right now, too. So I want to welcome you. This is to a Farm to Table Talk podcast. And I've got an interesting group. We're going to talk about Farm to Fork, what we think about it, how it goes, and kind of this whole event of drawing attention to Farm to Fork. So I want to ask each one of you to introduce yourselves, too. But I want to start with Michael Passmore. So, Michael, could you explain your ranch and tell people a little bit about that?
I'll do my best to give the 10-second elevator speech,
yep,
right?
Yep. That,
thank you, Mattis. My fine furry friend here, Mattis, is with us, and apparently he wanted to explain his side of the ranch. But I'm Michael Passmore, and my wife Vandy's here, and we co-founded Passmore Ranch about 15 years ago. And simply put, we raise fish, we source fish, we make caviar and all sorts of other yummy stuff, and we deliver it to professional and home chefs.
You know what? I'm going to venture a little bit difference here because one of those chefs that you're supplying is sitting right next to you. So I'm going to let you introduce her.
She is indeed. Oh, I love introductions. Let me see here. Where do we start, Toki? So I am sitting next to the one, the only Tookie. She's the real brains of the outfit over there. As much as I love Craig, this is the real brains here. If you don't follow her on Instagram, you should, because her tales, she makes me laugh every day. Her bento boxes for her kids are amazing. You gotta follow her, Chef Tookie.
Did he get that about right, Tookie? Is there anything you want to take exception to anything he said about you?
Thank you.
Yeah, get the mic up because we're competing with a band and okay. And either 100 or 200,000 people, one or the other. We're not sure which. 300, I think it's going.
Now I'm a little bit more nervous. I might need another beer.
Well, somebody will take care of that. Somebody get Toki a beer. Now, but Toki, there is something he did leave out, and that is you're one of the women chefs that are putting together the dinner on the bridge here. And that is a really, really big deal. We've got Suzette Gresham is over here. She's a two-star chef in San Francisco. She put together a team, and you're one, and they're all women that are the lead chefs. And tomorrow, you're going to be serving 800 some people on the bridge with 300 or 400 helpers and suppliers like Michael. That must be quite an experience.
It is, and it's something that I never thought I would do or have an offer coming from a small, less than 50-seat restaurant that my husband and I run. And I actually heard about Mr. Passmore way long ago when my husband was an executive chef at Lounge on 20, and one day he came home and he said, "Toki, I met this guy who sells sturgeon out of his truck." And I was like, "Wait, what do you mean? Live, like, sturgeon from his truck?" He's like, "Yeah, he pulled up and said, 'Want to buy some fish?'" And ever since then, you know, we've been friends and business with Mr. Passmore. So when I had the offer to be one of the lead chefs for the Tower Bridge, Chef Suzette said, "I want to use sturgeon from Mr. Passmore. What can we do?" And she wanted me to do a crudo, which is also Italian, but our restaurant's Japanese, so she thought it was a good opportunity for me to do something with the fish because of sashimi and crudo. So,
oh,
here we are.
So here you are the night before. Is there any, you're going to try to get a good night's sleep, get up early? Are you kind of worried about all of this now and for tomorrow?
All I know is I hope I won't get a hangover tonight. No. I definitely want to go back there. There's a couple more things to be wrapped up and get everything tidy and ready. But I'm really excited to make it happen.
So where you say go back there, is that where's the staging taking place?
So this year, we are prepping everything at the Golden One stage.
Okay.
Or Golden One Arena.
Yeah.
And then we're packing it all up, and then we're going to be sending it to the Tower Bridge tomorrow, first thing in the morning, to a commissary kitchen that's going to be built just for us to produce 850 guests.
So, well, I tell you, it's exciting. And now Don Watson, Don, we're going to tell people that you're not a Sacramentoan all the time. You're a Sacramentoan sometime, but you...
I am.
We're going to try to recruit you. Would you consider kind of moving in here and supplying these chefs with your lamb?
Absolutely. I actually grew up in the Delta down by Stockton. Graduated from UC Davis. My first job was over on American River Drive with Farm Credit Banks. So we visit Sacramento quite regularly, and it's kind of our second home. We, as most people who go to Lake Tahoe, stop in Sacramento. We've been doing that all of our lives, so it's not far for us.
So you're supplying lamb, largely you've been supplying lamb to San Francisco restaurants?
Yes, we started in the Napa Valley. The company's called the Napa Valley Lamb Company. So we started with Mustard's Grill. A friend of Cindy Paulson's is Alice Waters, and so we were introduced to Chez Panisse early on. And those of us who are in the niche food business have one day when we met a chef at Chez Panisse, and the chef we met was Jean-Pierre Moulet. And Jean-Pierre said, "Don, could you make those lambs a little smaller?" I said, "Jean-Pierre, they were smaller before they got bigger. We have lots of those." And so from then on, what we understood from that point on was there was an international standard for lamb. And American lamb fits that standard easily. And so we've been doing it ever since. And Chez Panisse has sent chefs all over the world. And so it's been really nice to follow that network wherever it's gone.
Well, we're glad you came over here to see what we're doing in Sacramento. Maybe San Francisco can catch up with us sometime. So.
Well, you know the warm weather grows beautiful tomatoes and produce of all kinds.
Yeah.
I think they're stealing your produce now.
Yeah, that's right. So, well, Camelia Enriquez Miller.
Hi.
You know, when we started talking about having this, everybody said, "Oh, you got to get Camelia." And we got Camelia. We're really happy to have you join us. You wear a couple hats. Seems like you're involved supplying lots of restaurants. You also have your own orchard. You have your own operation. And you are delivering product to others. And I guess you're probably supplying some of this for the chefs this weekend.
Right. For us, I come from a orchard, 100-acre orchard up in Placer County. I'm fourth generation, so it's been in my family since 1912. We grow stone fruit during the summer and citrus during the winter and persimmons. So we're a little bit in a shoulder season. So we get a little bit creative as to what we're going to supply. So we do have a lot of our late season summer produce, in particular on the dessert menu. But we also provided olive branches, for example, for the tables. But we're really just so happy to be a part of this community. Like I said, or like you said, we do have an orchard that we supply restaurants and grocery stores and one distributor in the area. And then I also have my own organic orchard on the same property. So
if there's one thing that you grow in your orchard that somebody says, "Oh, we really got to get a hold of Camelia and get that from her," what might that be?
We do have one specialty persimmon that's exclusive to our farm. So it was years of developing between grafting and cross-pollinating. We have a specialty amagaki persimmon that you can only find at our farm. So that's, you know, we grow lots of great stone fruit. Our climate's ideal for the perfect, you know, peach or nectarine. But when you're looking for something unique that nobody else grows, the amagaki persimmon is what we grow. And I know that's something that we send down to Benchoyaki often when those are in season, too. So
how do you ever hear about this in the first place? It's something that unusual. Because you went out and knocked on doors and you take it in and say, "Taste this." You've never had anything like it before?
Well, this is something my grandfather developed. He's actually my step-grandfather. came from Japan in 1912. His family did. So this is something, a fruit and a tradition that he brought over from his country. And, you know, it's been grown at Twin Peaks for probably 70 years. So it's kind of just grown in popularity, and the word has gotten out. And that is one fruit that we distribute throughout the country. So, you know, it's the only fruit that we distribute throughout the country. So we've kind of gained a little popularity with that.
So is it just shipped chilled to, yeah, I mean, literally, again, Chicago or someplace, and they're getting yours?
Yeah, Chicago. We'll have chefs call us directly from Chicago, but we have a two distributors that, you know, they'll come and they'll pick up throughout the season, and they ship it all over the country for us.
So, Toki, you're competing with those people that want to pull some of that product out of the area to be able to get it locally. And I'm curious when... you have so much in your back door, in a way. You've got Michael, you know, you've got all the both of what she was just describing, but you've also got the others that are producing in this area, too. How do you, as a chef, kind of keep up to speed on what might be available to you, what you might be able to work into your menu of the local production?
Well, Sacramento, as much as it's a big community, all of us as a restaurateur, we're very... tight niche. So we hang out a lot, we eat at each other's restaurant a lot, and we talk about food all the time. So our thing is we talk about food while we eat food. And being in Sacramento with such abundance of like local fruits and vegetables, yeah, it just comes naturally to us. And the farmers itself, they know us so well that like when the fruits are ripening or the persimmons are getting ready, they will give us a call, or they'll even text us like, hey, they're about to be ready. Do you want some? You know, so it's almost like they send us a reminder so we know when the fruits or the vegetables are at peak so we could get them in time and we could serve them, you know, as simple as more. So, like, you don't have to alter and do so much to the product because the growers itself, they grow it so much to this the best time to eat, so it's just beautiful. And growing up in LA, I never really appreciated fruits until I moved up to Sacramento, because I go to the supermarkets or I can even just go to a local farmer fruit stands, and it's just so beautiful, and I'm so grateful that I get to feed those fruits and vegetables to my kids.
You know, Michael, she's a customer of yours. Somehow when I think of your product, I don't think of beautiful. Is that fair?
Well, you just insulted my children, but that's fine.
No.
Okay. I should interject, though, that Toki did not fully explain why we bring her the best, and a lot of the chefs, because Toki will ban us from her restaurant if I don't bring her. So, like, we brought her an offering of figs, freshly picked figs, because, you know, if we don't give her our best, then she won't serve us, and I love their food. And so it she says it's this big communal thing. Really, it's just that she kicks us out if I don't bring her the best.
His mom delivered the figs, and when she walked through that door...
His mom there. She's in the audience.
I literally gave this biggest, happiest face, and then she went back. She's like, whoever was receiving those figs looked really happy. Well, it really didn't make it anywhere else but there, because I stuffed 10 of them in my face before I even made it anywhere.
So, okay, now I think the figs sound beautiful. I'm sorry, but it takes me a while to understand sturgeons, though. I mean... when you started producing what, you know, your fish and the sturgeon, you almost had to create a market here, didn't you? I mean, who was doing this before you?
That's interesting that you mentioned that. It's there is some truth to that. A decade or so ago, I really thought that we would have maybe 10 customers here in Sacramento, and that the abundance of our customers would be... our chefs would be in the Bay Area, Napa Valley, you know, more sophisticated areas, if I can just say that. And that has radically changed. And it's not just sturgeon. It's many of our fish. At one point, I had a A local chef tell me as I brought my fish truck around with the live fish, probably right after I saw Craig, and you know I brought these fish into him, and which we lovingly like to call a black bass, but it is in essence a largemouth bass, catfish, sturgeon, a silver carp, all of them wonderful. There's wonderful fish, just like there are fruits and vegetables that we may not be familiar with, but they're all wonderful. All sorts of protein. Well, chef told me these are not fine dining fish. So these are not acceptable. And it was really what he was trying to express was that they were not known fish. And that's what he was really trying to say. It wasn't until years later that he came up to me after he'd seen those same fish, I believe, on the menu of the restaurant at Meadowood in the French Laundry, that he acquiesced and thought, maybe they are fine dining fish in his world after all. But the area here, everyone walking up and down here, we live in a really, really neat time here in Sacramento that, and I'm sure you see it in your restaurant, where people are, you know, oh, you wanna put yakitori there, some tongue, you know, absolutely. So we have open diners who are willing to let chef feed them. It's one of my favorite things. I hate to order. Just feed me.
Yeah. So now, Don, your product, you got an interesting way that got that you were getting started. Now you were meeting some needs of chefs, but somehow part of your story, I think I saw online, was that your sheep got out and got into a vineyard at one stage, and it kind of started changing a lot of things.
Well, they did. We started our business in the Napa Valley, and we've always been in fire protection work where we'll eat the surrounding grassland. But one lunch, nobody was watching the sheep, and they ventured into Robert Mondavi's Pinot Noir down on Duhigg Road. And they had a wonderful lunch of about 10 to 20 acres of Pinot Noir. And I don't know if you've done this, but if your sheep get into the neighboring vineyard, it's very embarrassing. And then it happened to be Robert Mondavi's. The good news was we knew the chef at the Mondavi Winery. Her name was Holly Peterson. And he said, Holly, we have to do something. What can we do? And she said, well, we would love to serve some lamb at a wine auction dinner. So I said, I'll bring you two lambs this week. And she said, that'd be great. So I showed up at the winery about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the security guard was at the kitchen drinking a cup of coffee. And he helped me load the lambs into the walk-in, and he said, what's this all about? And I explained the sheep had gotten into the vineyard. He said, oh, that's interesting. Would you like a tour of the winery? I said, sure. And I figured we were just going to do his rounds. But on the way out through the foyer, I looked up, and there was a portrait of the security guard, and that was Robert Mondavi. And I had a one-on-one tour of the Robert Mondavi Winery. 2 weeks later, his guys called me and said, when can those sheep come back? And we've been picking leaves and grazing vineyard ever since.
So I've heard it makes the wine taste better.
Well, the really cool thing about being in Northern California is there's lots of wine being grown here, and whether it's fish or produce, they need something to support the wine at the table, because people do enjoy wine, but they want to have a meal with it. And so to have great protein, it's a better meal if they have us along. And so we've been invited to many, many great events. And so it's kind of fun to do that. You meet a lot of people that way.
You mentioned something, though. We ought to go back and explain a little bit, because you've done fire protection with your sheep.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, as a result of working with the Mondavis, we realized that wherever we went, we left the place looking like a golf course. And as we found in 2017, our golf course level grasslands don't burn with a lot of force. So the homes, wherever we've worked, were protected from fires. And these were the devastating fires in the North Bay on October 8th, 2017. So our other company is called WoollyWeeders.com. We raise about 5,000 acres in Northern California. And so we go from the Napa Valley up to Colusa, up the river, because we can do levees and we can do crop residue. We can do all kinds of things, because I honestly feel that sheep can complement any form of agriculture. We just have to figure out how our tool fits into your program.
Well, it's one of the things I thought was interesting to include in the Farm to Fork conversation, too, is that because everybody here, anyway, is concerned about climate change as well and the effects of the fires that we have. And then we've heard so much said about trying to control what's on the forest, the feed, the fuel for the fire I'm stumbling with. But the grazing does it. And
yes,
if you can combine that with a good meal and taking care of the chefs, you tie it all together.
and we sequester carbon in the soil because the sheep don't eat everything. They actually grind it into the soil, building soil, sequestering carbon everywhere they go. And, of course, they leave a beautiful deposit of manure behind every day, and that also feeds the soil. So it's not just what we get out of it, but what we leave behind is far better than when we found it. And we can see that through satellite imagery, or you can just go see wildflowers in the spring. Where the sheep are, there's much, much more to be seen.
You know, Michael, I think fish have waste as well. Is there a way that you are you salvage that somehow, the fish waste for fertilizing fields or fertilizing... you're looking at me like that's a crazy question. I just talked to somebody that was in aquaponics, and they were kind of explaining how they're able to recycle some of that.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for us. A couple of years ago, we began to do kind of a bastardized aquaponics to where we started utilizing our nutrient-rich water to fuel our row crops. And so that was enough of an experiment for us over the course of about 3 or 4 years that we're now in some planning to expand upon that. And absolutely, anytime we can use a drop of water to grow more fish, second, third, fourth, fifth use, and then go through that, and it becomes fortified to where then we can grow vegetables that much better, that's interesting to us.
You know, there's so much happening here, so many stories here. I mean, when we're sitting here in this tent, hi, everybody, welcome. And walking all around us are people that are wondering why we're in here. But they're, you know, the food tents. And everything. But people are coming here for the Farm to Fork event. And you know, you just have to kind of soak it in. And I want to ask you guys, how do you feel about that? Because, again, we're sitting here in a tent. We're looking at people walking up and down, going to the food booths. But they're in a city that's calling it Farm to Fork, Farm to Fork Festival. I don't know anybody else that's doing it, anything like this scale. How does it make you feel? How do you describe this to others of what's special going on here in Sacramento?
Well, growing up in L.A. and moving up to Sacramento and realizing how close farmers were and how fresh our produce are, it really matters a lot to me as a mother to make sure that I'm able to feed my kids the proper nutrients, the proper meal, less processed foods, and to really appreciate nature is it means a lot to me. So, you know, I recently myself started to also compost and never realized how much vegetable and fruit waste you get because I put it in a clear bucket and in 1 week it fills up so fast. And my kids actually starts asking for, oh, mom, what is this? And you explain it to them. And it's really just like same as circle of life, you know. And it really made me appreciate how much it takes to grow, how much it takes to harvest and bring it to our table and to cook it and to feed it to my kids. Well, what am I going to do to these wastes? You know, I want to bring it back to where it came from. And so really moving up to Sacramento, it really made me realize how important it is that these kids need to realize how important it is that a circle of life is not just with humans or animals, but it's also with plants and fruits and vegetables itself.
You know, when you hear a chef like Toki say something like this, and you would think that you've kind of gone through so many things already, but it seems like you're still having kind of an awakening as you get on this journey that is this Sacramento kind of Farm to Fork journey. It's making even yourself more attuned to thinking about what we're, you know, what makes it special, but more things for you to think about. And Camellia, I'm assuming you run into that because you're out talking to other chefs. I would think as this whole thing moves along, not just this week, but it would seem to me that you're experiencing something unique about this scene. How do you? Am I putting words in your mouth or you know, babbling on here?
No.
But what do you think?
No, I absolutely see the benefit for our farm with the farm to fork emphasis and the just the difference in the way the chefs are thinking and the way the consumers are thinking about where their food come from and how to utilize it. You know, being a farm for, you know, having our farm in operation for over 100 years, we've seen many different, you know, transformations and, you know, of how people are buying and how people are eating. Over the last, you know, 5-6+ years, we're seeing a huge difference. And for our scale of farm, you know, we're still considered a small farm. The connection with chefs like Toki and with most of the chefs in the Sacramento area, that connection has been huge to our sustainability. I mean, we're able to still do the same thing that we've been doing for 100 years. 20 years ago when my grandfather was still alive, he was seeing the decline. And now that, you know, we're able to continue to plant, continue to look at growing for the next generation, this is how Farm to Fork continues to help us and helps us remain sustainable and to produce, you know, really great quality produce.
And Michael, when you're out and interacting with people that are using your fish and you're in the midst of all this thing, how do they react to this vibe, this Farm to Fork event? Do they view it, some are cynical about it and just think that it's a passing fad, or do they really recognize that there's something growing here that's very different, literally growing here, that's really different and special?
I think there's a variety of thoughts. My clientele, my friends, my chefs, it's been an ethos for them since day one. So it's not necessarily I hesitate to characterize it as nothing special. It is something that they do. I think that they enjoy that it's being celebrated and that it's being recognized because it brings more attention to what they've done since day one. And the diner hasn't always realized that is why the food on their plate tastes as wonderfully as it does. So I don't know that there's really a focus on good, bad, or ugly, you know, about farm to fork, so to speak. Most of them are just doing what they do day in, day out. Same conversations that we've always had together. Us in their kitchens, them out at our ranch. And day in, day out, feeding diners really, really, really good food. And this just highlights it.
Don, when you're supplying lamb to restaurants, do you get some of them? Do they come out and see how you're raising the lamb?
We always try to get people to come out, and they do. We want the front of the house, the wait staff, so they actually understand the product and actually explain it to the clientele that come into the restaurant. And we want to be transparent. We want people to understand what we do. What we do is sustainable. It makes sense, farming. And I think the people that are here understand that. You know, Sacramento is kind of unique. When I was in school, I worked down at Stillwater Orchards, Dave Elliott's pears. And there's been a relationship between farmers in Sacramento that reaches back well over 100 years because there were pictures on the wall of great-grandfathers who brought the pears to Sacramento by horse. And it's kind of a cool thing to have. We have transportation that's been around by the river and obviously by horseback and now, of course, by Interstate Highway. But the food is here first before it goes anywhere. And that's what I think is really cool about Sacramento. And the food to fork, there's nobody who's doing this well. So it's kind of cool.
Boy, that's a strong statement. We appreciate that. Seems like it, too. We had a program the other night, and Santana Diaz, that several of you know, he spoke. And the one thing he reminded everybody was that if you want to know more and care more about how our food is produced, try to find out who grew it. Know the farmer behind the food, what's on the plate, and ask about it. Where did it come from? How was it grown? And you know, that's what I see with having you up here in Toki. You've got suppliers here of they could be of lamb and fish and all the produce that you're able to be involved with, and you have to have some pride in being able. I'm bringing my customers, you know, the very best I can, and I know about these farms. That even the magic you're doing in the kitchen has to be helped by the fact that the magic that went in and delivering it to your kitchen.
No, he's talking about the friendships that we have that develop because you're great artists in what you do, and the farmer, as it might sound odd, we're actually artists in what we do. There's lots of science, but it isn't nuanced into great food until artistry comes in.
Well, our good food that we make won't be good if the farmers don't take pride with what they grow too, you know?
Cause sure.
Like you said, it is a part of art. You know, it's an art for you to grow the lamb. It is art for you to grow the vegetables. It is art for you to grow the fish. And without everybody's finesse, you know, we're the last steps to bring it to the customers. Like, it is the greatest responsibility, you know. In the kitchen, we always say the dishwasher is the most important part of the position because without them, we don't have clean dishes to plate our beautiful food. And it's not just us cooking the food, but it comes all the way back, going back to the soil. Like you said, the grass that the sheep graze in, the soil that they grow their sweet fruits in, the water that Mr. Passmore uses. Like, it's so beautiful that it's connected so well that my ancestors were rice farmers. And I remember my great-grandmother always told me never to leave a grain of rice in my bowl because that is a full disrespect to the farmers that grew that grain of rice. And when I started composting, it really made me realize that the skin that I peel, that I throw away, that shouldn't be thrown away. That should be taken care of and returned back to soil because that is the full respect that you should give. And me growing up as Japanese, we say itadakimasu. And itadakimasu means thank you for the animals and the vegetables that we took their lives and we're going to nourish our body and we're going to take good care of them. And
could you say that again in Japanese?
We say itadakimasu.
We need a bumper sticker of that. That's, you know, I want to ask our audience. I see we have some fans out here that are here because they like this sort of thing. And do I have any questions here for any of our group? The other night we bribed questions with some free books. But you have a question. No, do you have a question? Do you have a question?
There's a question right here.
Okay, go ahead. I knew that. There she is. I knew it. Give it. Oh, there's one.
So what did you do with the figs? So what did you do with the figs?
I ate like 7/8 of it. And then I was nice enough to give 1/8 of it to my kids.
So I have a question. So here we are. We are in the middle of Sacramento, and there are arguably 200,000 people here. I think maybe it's 100, but there's been a lot of people here that are celebrating Farm to Fork. We have events that have been going on this week, and they all are celebrating a relationship and an appreciation, a relationship between the chef and the farm suppliers and customers that come to your restaurants that care about the story and the fact that you end up having some product that they can't get anywhere else, and it's a specialness. So nothing stays stagnant. So how would you like to see this grow? I mean, if we did this again in a couple of years, how do you hope that this goes from where we are right now? Are we going to say, well, this is as good as it gets? We've got Farm to Fork. We've got this big event. We've got a bridge dinner, and isn't that nice? We'll just do it again next year. But as far as this vibe, this dynamic in the community, how might you like to see it in the next few years?
I have two of my kids out in the audience, so I'd love to see the next generation be able to really put emphasis on continuing this tradition of, you know, farm to fork, sustainability, agriculture, and the connection with the restaurants and the consumer.
So. Mm-hmm. How about you, Don?
I'm really encouraged by young people who come into it. When my friends get together and we talk about sheep herding, we talk about it as an affliction. Not quite likely influenza, but it's something that we would do whether we got paid or not, and most of us don't get paid well. But what we do is what we love. And that's what every farmer does, and that's what every chef does, because there's just something wired, hardwired into us to grow food and to produce great food and for our families. And, of course, in order to be sustainable, you have to sell it for more than it costs you. So you open a restaurant or you go talk to chefs, and it works.
I think I can relate myself a little bit with Camellia, too. Being a mother of two, I really hope for their future in 20 years and 30 years that they will hold the same value towards food, because sometimes I feel like us nowadays, everything's all about convenience, and we live in the time of life that's everything is serviced in your needs and your way, and you could eat whenever you want to eat good food, and you could, you know, I just want people to appreciate the food more and educate themselves that it's not just us cooking, but it goes all the way back to the farmers, and it's not just the farmer, but it's also to the Mother Earth, you know. So to me, I hope kids in the next generation can still understand how important it is to eat well and to nourish their body.
Yeah, that's great. Michael?
I just have a few things. I would love to see, and I already see, the next generation of cooks and farmers having the relationships that I'm blessed to have with my chefs. I want to see that continue in our area, and I hope this message, this Farm to Fork initiative continues to foster that. And beyond that, I'd love to see it continue to spread to where we become more and more of the destination that we should be. I get the luxury. I eat way above my pay grade because of kind people like Toki. See, and that's why I bring my best to her, because then she feeds me. But I would love for more and more people across the nation to come see us. And recognize the relationships that our chefs and farmers have and the food that that results in, because it is a truly, truly exquisite and special place to come eat here in Sacramento.
You know, that's the thing. And in fact, I was just thinking, you know, Alec and Sarah Wasson are in the front row here, and they got married this summer.
And hey, congratulations.
We had people that came from all over the country, and they just really appreciated Sacramento. They came to town for the wedding. The wedding was best ever. But I think in addition to the wedding, they went out and they hit other restaurants in Sacramento. They went to the farmers market. I was posting the fact that this was going to be going on here and that we were going to be having the Farm to Fork Festival. And some of them were getting back to me and said, I wish we could come. And we had guests that were from New York and Florida and Ohio and Illinois and Texas. And they came here and said, oh, my gosh, is this Sacramento? You know, the image that they had. And some people had come to Sacramento years ago when it wasn't quite as interesting as it is now. I remember we came out here a long time ago, and I didn't have the buzz that it has right now. Is there an explanation of how that can come to be? What have you heard? I mean,
telling people about it. I have a hard time getting a seat these days. So let's try and keep that down a little bit now.
Okay.
Sacramento is very unique. It's always been next day service from the farmer. Everyone else in the country gets it a week later. Fruit that's picked the day it should be consumed can't be transported anywhere. It has to be eaten here. And we really have the luxury of having lots of different farming going on in Sacramento.
You know, that is a really good point. And I'm wondering that you're supplying a lot of chefs like Chez Panisse in San Francisco. It's hard getting in and out of there. I mean, we've got traffic on the highway, too. But and I think when I go in for a Giants game or something, it's not easy just to run in like here around town And Camelia, you probably see this. There's trucks pulled up to all of these restaurants we know. We've got 24 really good farm to fork restaurants or so in town. And their farmers are coming from Cape Canyon. They're coming from all over, which I understand, Don, it's not as easy to do in San Francisco.
When we leave for San Francisco, it's at 4:30 in the morning. If we were to leave Dixon, where all of our lamb is harvested, we could leave at 7 o'clock in the morning and be here by 8, and it wouldn't be a problem at all. But San Francisco's a challenge. But everyone who has food in the Bay Area or Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago got it from here because we have beautiful weather, the best soil and water conditions in the world, and there are things that are grown here that really can't be grown anywhere else, and it's not just persimmons. It's many, many things. We have walnuts and almonds and things that other people don't even have or have the ability to buy.
Well, since this podcast is not televised, they can't see, Toki, that you're shaking your head very, very. You really agree. I'll let you agree out loud so they can hear.
Well, we could just drive up to Camellia's farm when the stone fruits are ready, and she could keep them on the trees to the day that it's peak ripe, and we could just pick it up and drive it right back to our restaurant and cook it that day. Like today, Chef Allison went to Azolla Farms in the morning to forage her herbs for her garnish for tomorrow's Tower Bridge
dinner.
She
foraged this morning for tomorrow's herbs?
Yes.
Wow.
We have another farmer from Route 64 that comes walking through our back door that he harvests that morning so we could use it freshly picked, literally so fresh that they cut off the vine and you could see moisture coming out of it.
When you have those special offerings, are you able to tell your tell people that come to the restaurant that, oh, I've got these persimmons and you can't get them anywhere else in the world, but they're on tonight? Are you able to share that?
We do. And, people see it every day because, some vegetables and fruits, they don't do well in refrigerators. So we leave them out. And customers do ask, like, oh, those microgreens or those peaches or those corns that we get for this summer. Like, when did they come? And we're like, well, it just came this morning, a couple hours ago. That was picked a few hours before that. And you could really taste it because our restaurant, we sometimes just simply put it on our grill and grill it. And so when they bite into it, they could really taste the freshness from the farmer.
I'm getting hungry. It's one of the things that strikes me when we have these conversations of farm to fork. It sounds like it's exclusively about restaurants. And I'm wondering, does this happening with restaurants lead to people being better shoppers at supermarket, and that takes their game up because of that? And you supply stores as well. Do you see that?
Absolutely. The customer is going to drive, what is offered in stores, what is offered in restaurants. So it's all full circle. We've been working with many grocery stores here locally. And, there was a little bit of a transition from them. We've been growing fruit for so long. This was the original fruit basket of America. This was where, the fruit would get shipped out on ice trains across the country. This is, how we fed everybody in the country. But there was a time there where that stopped for a moment. Grocery stores were unable to purchase from small farms because, we had to meet different requirements, food safety requirements that small farms couldn't really meet, or pricing. Now that's changing again. We're able to do direct to store deliveries to each store. So even though it's a chain grocery store, it's Whole Foods or Nugget or something like that, that's all over the region or all over the country, we're able to deliver directly to the stores because of the demand of the customers, because they go into restaurants and they eat certain foods and they want to see that in their grocery store.
So we end up seeing, it's like going to your favorite bookstore, and they've written little stories about the books, and you always are impressed when they've written stories about, say, somebody's reviewing the book that they particularly like. Except now it's happening in stores, in the supermarkets, and they're putting little stories about here's the farmer and here's how they supply him. Have you seen some of the farms that started farm to fork just with restaurants been able to grow, produce more, and add retail as well?
Absolutely. And one of my jobs, I also work with a distributor that purchases from small farms. And, you know, we'll go to farmers markets and kind of scope it out and have a conversation with the farmer that, you know, maybe grows a little bit more than he can sell at the farmers market. And we know that a chef like Toki is really interested in having that product available to them. So we, you know, we're able to make those connections as well. So, you know, we are seeing the benefit. The small 1 acre farm like Route 64 grows on a quarter of an acre. And you can go down to a local grocery store now and see their produce as well. So it's been very beneficial to small farms.
So I'm wondering, anybody out here, farmers? Yeah, okay. Yeah, Vandy, yeah, raising your hand. And anybody here getting hungry from hearing all the food stories? Yeah, that's it. So you know what? The reason I think that they've ended this thing tonight at a certain time is that so you can all venture off and go to some of the good restaurants that we have here and here in Sacramento and enjoy it and think about these stories of how the product got here. Well, I really want to thank you. I think this is a good conversation. You know, yeah, give them a hand. Michael and Toki and Don and Camelia. You know, it's sitting here and talking with you, and you can just hear and sense your enthusiasm. I mean, you all are not seeing anybody kind of BSing you here. These are people that feel passionate about being able to produce food, to be able to produce something unique and special and have it available at the restaurants and stores. And what's happening here, I think it'll happen in some other areas as well. But again, I want to thank you for having this podcast conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.